Hello and welcome to House Einstein podcast number 31. Today is January 17th, 2024, and we are recording live from Colorado. This is the House Einstein podcast, which is of course sponsored by the House Einstein Brokerage, and I am your host, Osman Parvez.
Hello, hello. I'm Hamish Crabb. I call it co-host, and I help keep the brokerage running, keep all the lights on, and make sure everything's happening. So it's good to be here.
And I'm the founding broker for House Einstein, also a real estate agent primarily in Boulder, but also Denver and some of the mountain towns. House Einstein as a brokerage covers a much bigger footprint than just my personal business, and there are other agents on the team. But this is our official podcast, so welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. And in this podcast, we'll be discussing a number of topics, all in line with our goal of helping you make a smarter real estate decision. Here's our topics. We are going to be talking about... I got distracted and looked at the last one. We're going to be talking briefly about home warranties and how they're used in marketing for listings and otherwise. We're going to go into a deep dive on our year-end analysis, primarily focused on the city of Boulder. And we do have data for other places like Denver, Louisville, Lafayette, Longmont. But covering all of those places in a long-form podcast would be quite painful. So if you're interested in those other markets, reach out to us. We're just going to focus on the city of Boulder for this podcast. And then we'll segue to the sale of the week, which is 436 Highland Avenue.
You gave it away.
We're going to be talking about... Well, I gave away the address. I gave away the address, but nothing else. We're going to talk about our new listing on Andrew Drive in Superior, in Rock Creek. And then we're going to wrap this up with some predictions for this year. It's a little late, I suppose. Well, actually, it's not really late for predictions. We're just not doing it at the end of the year. We're doing it with knowledge of what actually happened last year. With a detailed analysis in our pocket, we can make some more intelligent predictions on what to expect in the coming year.
That's
and
right.
And that's what we'll be talking about for this podcast.
Awesome. I think before we completely kick off, I just want to apologize for the occasional sniffles that may come through the microphone. I woke up with a bit of a head cold today.
And for the record, just so people don't think I'm a tyrant, I said we could delay this podcast, and we didn't have to record today, but Hamish said he's fine, let the show must go on, and I appreciate that attitude, but he may have an occasional sniffle. And also, before we get started, there's our usual disclaimer that this podcast is entertainment only. It is not financial advice, it is not relationship advice or spiritual advice. Although we may delve into those topics, considered it all comedy, and it for sure isn't real estate advice. And if you're looking for real estate advice and you are a client, please just call us. That's the best way to reach us, and we will put together data and an analysis specific to your unique real estate situation, actionable information that you can use as you delve into this crazy real estate market. And if you're not a House Einstein client and you would like to consider becoming one, just visit us at houseeinstein.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. The newsletter is free. It comes out once a month. And you can see all the other places we put out content, including the blog that's on our website and Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. We're everywhere.
Yeah.
And this podcast is just one small piece, and it's available in all places that you can download podcasts, or at least most places that you can download a podcast.
Yeah. Well, alrighty. I guess I should kick off this topic. I wrote it in here on the show notes. High-level overview. Colorado has a toll lane ran by Express Tolls, I think it is, and they have an online portal. You go and, you know, pay through your card. I've got it set up to autopay, but every now and then they run coupons or like little promotions from local businesses and people in the area. And I saw one from Century 21 advertising a home warranty for free, and then in parentheses, $600 value. And I don't think I've really ever heard like a warranty be thrown around as kind of a huge benefit to a real estate deal or maybe a selling point or something that's going to get an individual to go with that particular brokerage or make that deal that way. So I threw it in there just to, I wanted to hear what Osman had to say about it and, you know, kind of how that works. So, yeah. You've got stories,
it's not,
too.
It's not entirely marketing fluff. It's mostly marketing fluff, sort of like being mostly dead. It's not entirely dead. And there are people that are very clever and have used home warranties to their benefit. In real estate, there's a company called Blue Ribbon that seems to dominate our local market. They're probably the dominant player nationally. I haven't really done the, you know, the analysis to see who tops the list of home warranty companies. But for a certain amount of money, and it's based on the purchase price of the home, they will sell you a warranty that covers things like your furnace, your dishwasher, your refrigerator. It's usually just appliances. Okay. There's a whole list of things that they'll cover. And the way that agents use home warranties is to market the home warranty to potential buyers as included. That's one way, and you'll see that when you walk in the door. This home includes a Blue Ribbon home warranty, or maybe it's in the broker or the private or the public remarks in the listing itself. So you'll see it on Zillow. This home offers a home warranty. Buy with confidence. And those warranties, again, are maybe $500, $600. So that value actually is real, although I think my memory reflects closer to $300 or $400, but that's the last time I actually was involved in paying for one. And how that came about was actually not in the original marketing of the listing, but to solve an inspection objection. So to get the buyer to take the house, we just said, look, instead of replacing a dishwasher that might be on its last legs, why don't we just buy you a home warranty? And that way, if the washing machine fails, that's included, if the refrigerator or the stove fails, all these other appliances fail for a period of 12 months, 18 months, I can't remember the term of what we purchased, you'll be covered. And that solved the issue for a fraction of the price of actually getting appliances replaced that were still working, but were close to the end of their life. So that's how I've used home warranties. But in practice, my brain always says they're kind of a scam, right? Because
they've got that feeling, right?
Well, it's like a home warranty for a used car, or not a home warranty, a warranty for on a used car. If you're buying a Toyota with a known history and it's not a super high mileage vehicle, the odds of you actually needing this extended warranty or whatever it is you're buying are so close to zero. But if you're buying, you know, one of these fancy European cars,
untested, right?
Particularly Range Rovers, Land Rovers, BMWs are just known to. I threw that in there just for you.
Yeah, I know.
are known. The newer ones are known to have major and very expensive issues. So it might make sense to buy a warranty. When it comes to houses, I think it's, like I said, mostly marketing fluff and not actually that valuable, and your odds of actually needing it are relatively low. But again, I do know people that have been very clever with home warranties, and they know that when you buy one, they don't send out a home inspector, especially if you already have owned the home, right? They may ask for an inspection report, by the way. So you have to read these things carefully to see what is and is not covered. Mm-hmm. But I know people that have gotten appliances replaced that they knew were close to the end of their life, but they never had any documentation. They just went out and bought a home warranty, and then whatever the cooling period is before you can use it, they waited that. And then sure enough, the dishwasher failed and they got a new one for a fraction of the price, and they filed a claim and got the money back.
Clever.
It's clever. It also is a little bit time consuming, and it just isn't in my normal mental framework as a business practice is to use home warranties. If a listing agent, if a seller came to me and said, look, your competitor is matching you on commissions, is doing all the same marketing, although they're not, we know they're not, but let's say they are. Let's say hypothetically, you're getting a good deal with this other agent, and they said, but Andy's throwing in a home warranty. Of course, we'll throw in the home warranty, whatever, right? Like, that's so silly as a competitive thing. But sometimes people will look at the list of services provided by an agent and see home warranty as a distinguishing factor when it really should never be. But, you know, that's the nature of the world. People are fooled by information they don't know about. You know, they're fooled by what sounds too good to be true, and they don't do their homework on whether it is true or not. It just sounds good, so they go with it.
Cool. Yeah, that's kind of not necessarily spidey senses, but that's, you know, I got that feeling from seeing that. So it's good to get kind of that clarification. It sounds like sometimes there is some strategic use, but yeah, for the most part, kind of indifferent.
I mean, it's 90% strategic use for marketing, 10% that you might actually have a claim, or very, very clever people that maybe are in a gray area of ethics, don't mind sticking it to the insurance company because they know that hardly anyone ever files a claim, and they read the claim, they read the information, they know they could do it, and they get away with it, and are quite proud to tell me about it.
Sneaky.
And I'm happy for them that they got a new dishwasher and got a few $100 out of a home warranty company. It's not my business practice, but there you go. Okay, so you ready to move on from that topic?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So one thing I think of, when the more somebody is trying to push and market something at me, the less I believe it to be true. The more it's like, especially what I consider kind of cheesy marketing, like the bench at the bus stop, the grocery cart, all the places that that you see marketing of agents, I usually
billboards
services. It just makes me suspicious of what they're actually offering is not being true. So we're on the other end of the spectrum as a business. We're mostly service and 10% marketing of what we do, and we're trying to fix this so we're more balanced. So we actually talk about our mission a lot, and I'll remind people that are listening: our mission is to help people make a smarter real estate decision. It's not fluff. It's not a make-believe thing where, like, there's a guy in town who has like a troubleshooters network or something. I can't remember his name. He has his own like Angie's List equivalent. He has an AM radio station, and he has people call in and talks about their horrific experience with contractors. And then he always pitches his special list. I can't remember the name of this guy, which is probably better so I don't get sued anyway. I got some marketing material from him that said, you know, you could become on our special list and you'll be one of only X many realtors on the list. I'm like, well, that's interesting. So I looked into it, and they wanted like $1,200 a year. They didn't care whether your service was quality or not. All they wanted was the money, and then they would gladly give you this troubleshooter network, whatever it is. I can't remember exactly what it's called, and I was just so offended, and I probably have these numbers wrong, but Troubleshooter Network sounds right. This is, you know, 15 years ago.
To that effect or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So blue ribbon warranties, fake credentials, and cheesy marketing, and cheesy preferred networks, we don't do.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense as a business. Okay. Let's move on from this.
Yeah, well, to the point of our mission, right? Making a smarter real estate decision. We're jumping into a bit of a data dive here.
We're going to jump into a bit of a data dive. So I used to do this sort of analysis every single month when I first got into real estate, having worked in the investment community, having been hired. One of my first professional jobs was as an analyst doing equities research, and I'm probably more qualified than the vast majority of people who have a real estate license to do this sort of analysis. And I saw that as a distinguishing factor and it's also why I got into real estate. I felt like there wasn't enough analytics. It wasn't actionable, and it wasn't actionable both from a timing perspective, and it wasn't actionable based on a focal length. The focal length was so, you know, 50,000 foot level that you couldn't use that information to make intelligent decisions on the ground, because you're looking in a specific neighborhood in a specific price range, or you're selling in a specific neighborhood in a specific price range against certain types of homes. And that, so broad-based analytical data is not very useful at all. Even the whole city of Boulder is not particularly useful, even though that's what we're going to talk about, is what happened in the city of Boulder.
A sample size, right? One of those issues.
It's sample size, but it's also... It's sample size errors happen when you're looking at things like average sale prices and average dollars per square foot with small sample sets. But I prefer to use the term granularity. Like, you really need fine-grained analytics with recent data, but also a broader perspective of what else is happening in the world besides your particular neighborhood. Like, it's quite possible, for example, like if you were buying in Mapleton Hill, which we'll talk about later in this podcast, the sale of the week, it's quite possible that the last few sales were bidding wars and drove the dollar per square through the roof. And so therefore, you might conclude, well, your listing should get a crazy bidding war, should sell immediately for some crazy number, when it may not be the case at all because of other factors that you just don't know about. And those other factors are really important. There's a saying, right? There are the things you know, and then there are things that you don't you know you don't know, and then there are the things you don't know you don't know.
Right?
Yeah. There are three categories, and with real estate, it's often the latter two that are driving the situation, and valuation in particular is so sensitive to that. But let's get into the data, because I could this.
Let's I'm put some eyes on it, right?
A two out, what's that?
And put some eyes on it, right?
Let's put some eyes on it. I'm going to try not to make this a 2 hour long podcast, because that would be quite painful. But let's start with a bit of an overview, not just of the city of Boulder, which is our focus, but also of Denver and Boulder County. And I'm actually going to try to share screen here, Hamish. We'll see how this goes in a live podcast.
I think we got away with it last time.
I think we did too, but all right, there it is. Social charts, share. Okay, so this is my mega spreadsheet. And I've been tracking real estate in Boulder and in Colorado since 2004. And this is the evolution of that. The data source is IRES. For the city of Boulder, Boulder County, Fort Collins. It is actually not for Denver. This is incorrect. This should be Re-Colorado. We'll fix that live. And so this is simply just sales volume that occurred over the last 12 months, broken out by quarter. And the reason it's broken out by quarter is that it's much more useful as information. We see a lot of variability, especially in the smaller markets, month to month. But quarter by quarter, it's a little easier to get a sense of what actually happened. And I did have the spreadsheet going back to 2021, but we're going to ignore 2021 because that was the COVID response year. And 2022 and 23 are much closer to what I would consider to be a more normal year, but with rising rates that slowed the market dramatically. Mm-hmm. And what you can see in this chart, starting with the city of Boulder, is that across the board in every single quarter, sales volume was lower, but the percent change kept dropping beginning in the third quarter. So it increased into the second quarter where there were fewer sales in the previous year, and then it dropped to 4% in third quarter, 4% below the previous year. And then in the fourth quarter, the very end of the year, it was just 0.6% below, which is one deal. And frankly, it's not even that one deal because we took out affordable housing. It could easily be – it's materially not significant. It's basically the same thing. So you're looking at sales volume difference in the city of Boulder last year of 10% lower sales than the previous year, with almost 0% difference in the last quarter. And in the county, a little bit different of a story. Started off with much lower sales in the first quarter than the previous year, and then that delta continued to tighten up. It went from 24% below to 20% to 12%. And then we finished the fourth quarter with actually more sales volume than the previous year. So the market was back up in the fourth quarter. And year over year, we still ended up with 13.5% below the previous year total. But it looks like the market was starting to wake up pretty strongly in the fourth quarter.
Sure does.
All right, let's switch to Denver, which is our other major market area that we cover.
And you do city or county for this one?
I'm really glad you asked. Yeah. So I had a fight with the MLS over this because Denver county and city should be the exact same thing. But it's not. And the reason it's not is because agents are miscoding their properties when they input the data. So I went down the rabbit hole and I contacted them and I asked them to explain it. And they said, no, it's the same. And I said, well, then why isn't your data the same? And the reason it's not the same is because agents that are having listings outside the city of Denver, right, they would prefer their listing to reflect Denver, not whatever.
County. Yeah.
So they're less likely to lie about the county, but they are much more likely to lie about the city. So this is from a data collection perspective. We are collecting data on the county. And it's we just call it Denver because they're the same thing. But when we search for this data, it's Denver County. So you are looking at a year that started off with 18% fewer sales than the previous year in the first quarter. And then it got worse in the second quarter. Sales dropped 28% from the previous year. And then it started to tighten up a bit. 13% in the third quarter and then only 11% in the fourth quarter. And year over year, 19% fewer sales than the previous year. And that's a huge difference in sales.
It's quite considerable, yeah.
Yeah, massive difference. Fort Collins, which we do cover. We don't do quite as many deals in Fort Collins, but we typically close, you know, one or two a year. We have clients that take us there. I have family that lives there. So first quarter started off with 16% below the previous year. It then increased just like Denver, just like Boulder County. Oh, sorry, just like the city of Boulder, not Boulder County. It increased the delta to 26%. And then it started to tighten up. Third quarter, 16%, and fourth quarter, 7%. And it finished the year at 17% below the previous year. So, you know, one of the biggest conclusions when you look at all of this, and I hate to, you know, just tell you I was right, but it's, I'm going to say it, I don't know what else to say. Like, when this cycle started, right, we finished the peak of the market activity, and it looked like inflation was coming and COVID started to hit. What I kept telling our clients and I myself have followed was to focus on the city of Boulder, flight to safety. Just like you're going to U.S. Treasuries, if you're going to be invested in the real estate market, flight to safety during turbulent times is a way that you can preserve value. And sure enough, Boulder, and we're going to flip to prices here in just a second, Boulder has been far more resilient than these other markets when it comes to price declines. Boulder, yeah. And I don't need to flip to the chart, we're just going to stop sharing. Boulder saw a price year over year for the fourth quarter, saw a price increase of almost 11%, just under 11%. And I was so questioning of that data, and you'll see this on our Instagram, if you want to flip to our Instagram or have a link to it, Hamish, in the... Mm-hmm. In the show notes, because I put that particular slide up that I'm going to pull it up because it's the fastest place for me to look at it myself. Oh, yeah. No, I'm looking at House Einstein's. I need to look at my personal. Yeah, you could share it to House Einstein's if you want. It's on my personal.
Definitely plan to.
Fourth quarter analysis. Yeah. So I look at year over year, and I look at median sale prices. So the median sale price in 2023 in the fourth quarter was $1.39 million, and that's up 10.8% year over year. Maybe I'll just share the screen really quick. we'll just share it. I mean, what could be more boring than hearing somebody read data?
I mean, okay, those on audio only of the podcast are signing up for it from the start, but.
Well, they are. That's true. But you really should look at the supplemental information. If you're not following our Instagram, you should follow it. You can follow me personally. I do dump data from time to time. I no longer post photos of my lunch, but I will post photos of analysis of what's happening in the market. Can you see it, Hamish?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay. So the median sale price increased almost 11%, 10.8%. And we did this together, just double-checking ourselves. Let's see what happened on a dollar-per-square-foot basis, because that's just the median sale price. It doesn't necessarily mean homes appreciated that much, but we see almost the exact same statistic on a dollar-per-square basis. The increase of was 10.7% year-over-year in the fourth quarter. And sold volume is not insignificant. We're not talking about just a couple of houses. We're talking about 169 in 2022 and 171 in 2023. The difference in volume, of course, is only two houses, so who cares about 1.2%? It's basically the same sales year-over-year for the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And the median negotiated discount is also basically the same. 2.7%, 2.8% is what... You know, if you're trying to benchmark your agent, by the way, yeah, you could say 2.8% is probably a pretty typical discount. But hidden in this, by the way, is the reality that new listings don't see big discounts, if at all, especially the first weekend and maybe the first 2 weeks. And stale listings that have been on the market a few months, you can potentially negotiate 5-6%. So my general rule of thumb is brand new listing, don't expect to negotiate much. If it's a listing that's at least 2 weeks old, you might get between 1-3%. And if it's a listing that's 2 months old or older, you should be targeting 3-5%. That doesn't mean what you ask. You can ask for anything you want, but that's probably where you're going to end up. And that's based on almost 20 years of negotiations for real estate. That's just how seller mentality works. And sometimes you get lucky and people capitulate, especially if they're not represented. But more likely than not, this is these are pretty typical discounts. And then when you look at days on market, there was a really big increase. I was surprised by that too. So even though days on market, homes were on the market longer, from 49 to 60 between the two quarters of the end of the year, year over year, that didn't seem to have any impact on volume or on negotiated discount. In fact, prices are up. And so what does that tell you? It just reaffirms the reality of the city of Boulder, and that this is an incredibly affluent market, and sellers are not under pressure typically to sell. It's rare that you get things like estate sales that are highly motivated, and when you do, agents sometimes price it low. We talked about that in a recent sale of the week, where it was pretty clear they priced it surprisingly low, and they got a bidding war and got it sold fast. I like that, except it often leaves money on the table and increases the risk for the seller, but it's an option we give our clients too. Like, do you want to price it intentionally low? Because it means you won't be on the market nearly as long, and you might get it sold right away. So that just points to the fact sellers are not under pressure. Sellers, at least in the city of Boulder, even though it's been on the market longer, they're willing to wait, and they're incredibly intelligent. The vast majority of our clients are incredibly intelligent. They're financially literate, and they know that interest rates are not going to stay high forever, and that when and they don't, you know, because they aren't under pressure to sell, they can afford to sit on it, and they do. And so, so likely we'll talk about what's going to happen this year in the prediction segment.
Yeah.
So that's the big picture of what's been happening in the market. What else do you want to talk about?
Oh, I think you mostly hit it. We went through that kind of data dive a little bit yesterday, and the striking point, right, and you kind of recapped it, is that even with a relatively large increase of days on market, things still progressed upwards from a price standpoint. And shockingly, since starting this career, I get asked all the time, how's the market? And, everybody's all 2023 has been really tough. And I'm like, yeah, it has. The prices haven't really shifted it much to a lot of buyers' chagrin. And, it was just cool to see it worked out properly.
Well, let's go a little further. And I'll just do kind of a brief walk through the full analysis for City of Boulder. Let me jump back into sharing screen. Because we promised the detailed analysis, we're going to do a little further. We're not going to talk about Louisville, Lafayette, Longmont, all those other places, although we have the data for that. It just makes sense to cover the full spectrum of stuff that I've got on file now that I've done the analysis. So this chart it shows new listings in the city of Boulder. You could see the data on the left that's accurate, but I'm just going to focus on the actual graph. And the blue area is the average of the past 3 years. But keep in mind that average includes our pandemic year, mm-hmm. right? We have 2001, 2002, and 2003 in this average. And the yellow line is just the last 12 months. It's just last year. So, and let me just make sure I'm confirming this formula right, that if there is data, it includes the current year. So this chart, if you look at the yellow line for new listings, this is just new listings entering the market. This is a very typical pattern. It starts to grow in January, and it peaks typically May or June, and then it starts to come down. There was an unusual spike in September, and then it came down to our typical lowest point at the end of the year, only 36 new listings, which is always when we have clients calling us and saying, why are we not getting any new listings? I'm like, well, it's December. I'm trying to go on vacation because this is when I want to go on vacation, is the fourth quarter. It's the best time of year for me to be out of pocket and work remotely because the market's so quiet, although it doesn't necessarily work out that way for my personal business, but that's how it works. So let's look at
part of the reason I'm here too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Active listings. So same chart dynamics. And I forgot to mention these error bars represent one standard deviation. Thank you, Tyler, for forcing me to do that years ago. I still do it. All right. So here you're looking at the accumulation of unsold listings. So new listings as well as listings that have been on the market, as long as they're not under contract, these are active. And you can see that it peaked this year in September and then started coming down. And it was at the very edge of the one standard deviation until September when it broke through. But the seasonal pattern is still very similar.
Was September when we had that huge rate drop? Do you remember?
We did. I think that is when rates started to drop. Mm-hmm. Is September or maybe October when we started to see rates start to finally come down. But the city of Boulder is so. First, this is detached single-family houses. Does not include attached. That's a different analysis. But the city of Boulder is far less sensitive because buyers are more affluent. But for sure, every buyer that is using a mortgage is going to be sensitive to rates.
Right.
So I think that was contributing here. But inventory has started to come down. The other thing to note is, like, we're not talking about, you know, massively higher inventory levels, right? We are talking about significantly higher, but not enough to, you know, not enough to drive prices down, and nowhere near what we saw in 2005 and 2006 when I really was tracking the bubble, the real estate bubble nationally, where we saw inventory 600, 700 houses in the city alone. And now, you know, we're not even half that at the peak. So higher inventory, but up from extremely low inventory.
Mm-hmm.
And now let's look at pending sales. Pending sales, you've got the average again. 3 years is the blue. Last 12 months is 2023. And pending sales were down. You know, they started off the year a little stronger, but then in May they started to falter. And for many months, there were more than one significant deviation below the average.
Yeah. Explains
so the pending sales increase are just homes in under contract. Yeah. Yep. And now let's look at sold homes, sold listings. Woo. Ignore the bar chart because that's not updated, but the blue is definitely updated. And you've got sold volume of homes compared to the average by month. And again, a few months, you know, this is just a mirror of pending sales. Not all pending sales make it to closing, but the vast majority of them do. So, you know, below average, but mm-hmm. not a horrible year. And we know we already shared that data, ended up significantly lower volume. What was that number, Hamish? I shared it at the beginning.
Oh, I don't recall.
Oh, hold on. Let's go find it. There's a little. There it is. Sold volume again, the city of Boulder. So you ended up with 10% by the end of the year, but you started off with much higher double-digit percentages below.
Your million tabs.
I know what they all mean.
Yeah.
They're all color-coded, and they're all organized.
No, it's beautiful.
And they're all designed to update. It usually takes me about 4 hours to work my way through all of this. Okay, city of Boulder, days on market, no surprise, they're high. It was super high in January. We started the year mega high, mm-hmm. and we ended the year relatively high. But then middle of the year, kind of typical numbers.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, small samples for January and December.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Yep.
Okay. This is a chart showing the median price over a long duration of time. 2014 to 2023, so a decade of appreciation. I'm not sure, other than it's a pretty chart. You can see that we peaked. You know, this is March 2022, and we've come down since that point. And it's even more visible when we look at the same chart expressed as a dollar per square foot. And in this case, we've got a best fit line, a regression that's only showing, you know, 89%. So the best fit's not like the most amazing fit in the world, but you can still see the peak, March 2022, and then where we ended the year. December 23, how much lower we are at a dollar per square basis. So prices have definitely come down. And those that say Boulder prices never fall are wrong, especially if you happen to have been unfortunate enough to buy at the very peak of the market.
Mm-hmm.
And absorption may not actually be updated. It should work okay. I haven't checked absorption and double-checked the data. But I think this is just this is sold volume as a percentage of the preceding month's inventory. So one way to think about this chart is, okay, if you're a buyer stepping into this market, what month are you going to see the most competition? And, you know, March and April are in competition here with very high absorption levels on average. And then the rest of the year kind of drops from that point. So if you're a seller, we always try to get our sellers on market as early as possible in the spring because they take advantage of this upswing.
Right, that
and
way.
And in the fall... Yeah, if you're selling, there's more margin for error with pricing, and we'll talk about errors in pricing when we talk about sale of the week. If you list in the beginning of the year, then at the end of the year, and if you haven't gotten it under contract and sold by July, you kind of screwed up because now you're into the doldrums of the market. You're into bargain season, especially as we move into August, September, and October. That's when our best deals are negotiated. That's when sellers are most willing to capitulate. So. Price it right always, but you have more room for error in the first half of the year. And that's enough for this analysis segment. of the podcast.
I think one of the more common misconceptions I hear people talk about is everybody seems to be wanting to talk about timing the market. And some of your longer time period graphs kind of show this. As long as you're expecting to kind of hold for a reasonable period of time, right? You're not day trading a house. You can begin to see these trends and whatnot. Like if you purchase in 2022 at the peak, yeah, you know, prices have fallen pretty significantly from December of last year. Though time will kind of tell, and you've got that best fit line, no promises. But yeah, it's detrimental to yourself if you think about how much money you've lost and it's only been a year.
Well, I mean, I agree with you fully, and it's a misconception about real estate investing, whether it's your personal property or you're buying as an income property. We represent a lot more personal property buyers, by the way, than income property people. Mm-hmm. But the same principles apply. And the first principle is buy the right house.
Yeah, always. That's
getting a deal on the wrong house is not the right answer. Like you're moving into or you're investing in the wrong house. It doesn't matter if you got a good deal on it. You bought a lemon. Mm-hmm. You bought something that's going to underperform. If you're an investor, you bought something that's going to eat you alive with bad tenants, high turnover, high maintenance costs. And if you're buying it for your personal family, well, congrats. Your family is now living in not the neighborhood you really wanted and not a house that suits your needs.
Right.
Like, how is that a win? So the number one principle is buy the right house. And the number two principle is don't overpay for it. Mm-hmm. But frankly, it's better to overpay for the right house than it is to underpay for the wrong one. Yeah. So
keep the long term in sight, right?
It's a no-brainer because in the long run, even if you overpaid slightly, 5% more than you should have or whatever the number is, if it's the right house, you will still be able to sell it and not maximize your loss will not be massive unless you have to sell it within the first 3 years. And by year five, almost even the dogs of the market are usually doing better than they had 5 years ago. Maybe not on an inflation adjusted basis with 5% free money at the bank right now, but it's not the worst thing in the world. I think the worst thing in the world is buying the wrong house.
Yeah.
It just guts me especially when our clients tell me they want to sell because of things that they knew about, that we told them about, but they didn't think it would be as big of a deal. And that includes the homelessness issue downtown, that we warned them that this is a problem in this location. The location has other offsetting factors that are amazing, but the homeless situation is probably not going to get fixed. It's probably going to go – the safe bet is it's going to get worse. And if that's in your thesis, how do you feel about that? And they were like, it's fine. We're not worried about it. We've lived in big cities. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to say it three times. It's not my investment decision. But it sucks. It really guts me when they have to sell later because of that.
And as we transition off of this topic to the next, I would just like to remind you of our disclaimer at the start.
That's right. Yep. Our disclaimer at the start. This is entertainment. And if you're serious about buying or selling, pick up the phone and call us. And we are more than happy to advise you on a one-to-one personal level. If you have another agent that you're thinking about firing, you can call us too. We may not be able to get you out of that exclusive agreement you signed, but we certainly can look at it, and we certainly can and help you think through your next option. And as long as you call us, we cannot solicit you.
Yep.
If you are under an exclusive agreement with somebody else, you have to pick up the phone and call us. That's how it works in real estate land.
Great.
All right.
Well,
and you can test drive us, by the way. HouseEinstein.com is where everything lands at the end of the day. So go visit that website, do your homework on us, and make a smarter decision.
Good catch.
Okay. We ready?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to now move to our sale of the week. 436 Highland Avenue. And let me pull this up on my screen so we can kind of go through the basics of this house. It was listed as a 3,400 square foot, four bedroom house, two on the upper, one on the main, one in the additional space, which is likely the studio, and three bedrooms. It had a two car detached garage. And it is, of course, in one of the most desirable neighborhoods in the city of Boulder, known as Mapleton Hill. but not all locations in Mapleton Hill are as desirable as others. This one happens to be on one of my absolute favorite streets, Highland Ave. And it also isn't butted up against 5th or butted up against 4th. It's sort of middle of the block, which means you're not going to get tons of traffic. You also don't have the negative name recognition of Mapleton itself and the traffic of Mapleton itself. Mapleton Ave, which gets insane amounts of traffic. And unfortunately, when you tell people you live on Mapleton, it comes with some additional baggage.
Yeah.
So this house is right in the middle of the block, Highland Ave. And it's, you know, it's clearly been updated as a home. If you look at the photos online on Zillow or actually, I guess I can't really can I share a screen? I don't know if I should share a screen from go to realtor.com. You should be able to see the photos of this property. And you can see the kitchen's been updated, and the choices in finish and fixture, all are what I would consider to be appropriate, are matching in the style and taste of a historic home. It's not overly modernized. They chose colors and finishes. Everything looks very tasteful, but very clearly updated as well. It's nicely marketed. It's nicely photographed. No issues with any of that. It also has a 2-car detached garage, which is a rarity. It also has a carriage house bedroom for your guests. It's got a cool plunge pool. It's got a very private backyard. And it's understated, in my opinion, on the curb appeal, which I think is the right model for homes. Personally, that's a personal taste thing. I think understated on the outside and very tasteful and expansive on the inside, nicely updated is sort of my preferred. That's, personal taste. But I think this home checks so many boxes, except for one key factor, price. But let me talk about the history of the house a little more, because this is something that is really important if you are a historic home buyer. This particular home is not just in the district. It was landmarked in 1998. The house itself was platted in 1888, and then it was developed in 1903. And the first owner of the house, the person who bought the land from the real estate developer of Mapleton Hill, was a postal carrier. So I just for a moment pause to reflect on the fact that in at the turn of the century, not this last one, but the one before, in 1900, a postal carrier could buy this land and 1902 and afford to build a home and put his family in this home for over 90 years. This home stayed in the same family, the R. Durrell family. And when the home was landmarked, This postal carrier was noted as a significant person because he was only one of three letter carriers in the entire city. And sadly, he died the same year he retired, which, I mean, that was a very dedicated human being who worked 35 years in the Postal Service. And then the home passed to a son, and then the home passed again to a son, and it wasn't sold outside of the family until 1993.
Wow.
And hold on, let me pull up the real estate appraisal card, what we want is the historic record. Hold on one second. Let me pull up the historic record on this house. And I guess, here's a takeaway. I really like historic homes. I'm a huge fan. We're not in one right now as our personal residence, but absolutely it's very likely we will own one at some point in time. The style of this home is called Edwardian vernacular. And let's see, is there anything else to note? One and a half story brick dwelling, front gabled roof, intersecting gable on the west.
Aesthetically pleasing, just nice.
Yeah,
and
aesthetically pleasing, very characteristic of homes of the era. And at the time of the historic inventory, it was still owned by the family, which is really funny. Yep. So it's described as a preserved example of that style of home, Edwardian vernacular, and reflected in the decorative wood shingles in the gable, the balcony with door flanked by windows, topped by decorative crown, yada yada, architectural story. There you have it. So that's the house itself. And what actually happened? Let's talk about the deal. So I don't think anything's wrong with the photography, and I don't think anything's wrong with the listing description. I think everything was wrong with the wishful thinking pricing. And I can't entirely blame the agent for this, because at the time the market was in a downward direction. Prices were starting to come down, still coming down, but you know, if you're using the previous year's 2022 comps from the summer, you could easily mistakenly overprice this. And I think that's largely what happened. It was listed in March, end of March, almost the end of March, three quarters of the way through. And then after a month, and that was listed at 4.5, after a month, they dropped it 300,000, slightly over 300,000. They waited another month. Sorry, they waited more than another month. They waited until September. So it was on the market the whole summer of 2023 last year until September, when they dropped the price another 200,000 and brought it to sub four. It was now 3,995 in September. And then nothing happened for 2 months. It sat there. And right before Thanksgiving, which is one of my preferred times to negotiate a deal personally, an offer was made through the listing agent, no less, who double-ended. That's what happens when you go with a listing agent. They collect both sides of the deal. And the seller accepted a massive discount of another $800,000. And it just closed on January 16th. For 3.2. So 1.3 million below the original list price, 800,000 below the last list price, and an agent who double-ended the deal with an exclusive right to sell. And the buyer used conventional financing, fixed rate. And that's how the cookie crumbled. There were no disclosed concessions on the deal. And somebody got themselves an amazing house. So this is more of a price you would expect to see in Newlands, not a price for Mapleton Hill. And I think it reflects a fantastic bargain.
Yeah, very pretty house. Well, looks well put together. And yeah, I don't have a whole bunch of thoughts on this. I do just love the use of the flat irons in all the photos. I think that it's really tastefully done. Quite a fan of the photography on this one.
Yeah, I mean, the agent is very competent. We've done many deals with him and his team. He does a lot of listings, so I'm not sure how he can spread that much attention to all of these different clients. But when I look at the quality of photography, it's up there. I don't see the videography there yet. I think our videography is far better. But the crucial mistake here was wishful thinking pricing and then not adjusting fast enough. If you're going to adjust, and this is actually really important for us to remember, Hamish, too, that if we have a client that really wants to price high, then we need to have this conversation about, okay, if our wishful thinking price doesn't result in an offer within a month, it's time to come down to reality. And if our next price doesn't attract enough offers in a month, it's time to seriously come down to reality again. Like, we could just be sitting here all summer long, and now you're negotiating with the bargain hunters in the fall. And that's what happened. That they ended up, they were sick of the listing. They're sick of dealing with their listing agent. They're sick of having to maintain this property, clean it, mow the lawns, take care of the landscaping, clean up after showings, all the things that happen. And it's not selling. And people just get tired of people in their homes walking through and not necessarily even being qualified to buy. It's the misery of having a long listing eventually results in a big capitulation. Mm-hmm. And this is the classic story of huge capitulation. Poster child. And maybe that should be our podcast thumbnail, is huge capitulation, because that's what happened here. Not to use a Donald Trump word, huge. I said huge, huge. Just for the record.
I got excited.
No, please no. Not after this week.
Not a bigly capitulation.
Not bigly. Yeah. Oh my. Okay. All right. Let's segue on to our new listing. You ready, Hamish?
Yep.
Okay. So our new listing is in Superior on Andrew Drive. What's our number?
2310.
Oh my. 2310 Andrew Drive.
A good year.
And this particular property had been listed with another agent in the past. We did a listing takeover. They were not able to retain the client, most likely because they priced it wrong. I mean, massively high last year. We're now priced well below, in line with the comps, and there's nothing like it on the market. It's, from a segmentation perspective, it is an affordable house with a very short commute to the city of Boulder or to Denver or to any of the job centers on the, you know, the US 36 corridor.
Yeah.
And The one thing that's unusual about the house is that it was developed with a loft, not a third bedroom, on the upper level. So all the bedrooms, it's a classic house. All the bedrooms are on the upper. It's got a very functional flowing floor plan. It's got a two-car garage. It's in a great family-friendly, safe neighborhood. And it's not too big. It's under 1,800 square feet. But so it's a small but functional home. The basement could be updated could be finished for more space, and the loft could be converted into a third bedroom. And in fact, one of our contractors is putting together an estimate to convert so that we can hand that to potential buyers. We're also listing it, frankly, as a three bedroom. I know that's wrong in the listing description. It says very clearly third bedroom is a non-conforming loft, but the reason we didn't list it as a two bedroom is when you meet with a buyer's agent, what do they do? What's the first question they ask, Hamish?
How many bedrooms you want?
Wrong. They ask, how much money have you got?
Okay.
Most agents, anyway. We ask what their goals are. What are you trying to achieve? We eventually get to price range, but most agents want to know how much money you got.
Yeah. What are we playing
with? In this particular, one of the second questions is how many bedrooms and baths? And almost nobody is going to say, I'm looking for a two-bedroom and up. And almost no agent's going to say, you should choose a two-bedroom, not three, because there are all these two-bedrooms with a loft. So we listed it as a three with a lot of disclaimers that it's actually a two, and with an estimate for what it's going to cost to convert it to a three.
Yep. And you think about, right, these automated searches. If you're looking for a three-bed, you wouldn't want to go to a two-bed and start looking from there. You could convert. So this gets it in the door. It's, I think, reasonably priced to the point where adding in a wall, making it a third bedroom is feasible and not unrealistic as well.
Yeah. The home was lived in by the owner for a little bit and then rented for a year. There were a couple things that came up during that rental period. So it shows some wear and tear, but almost all of it's cosmetic. Mm-hmm. It's one of these things. When, in fact, when we first saw the house, I was surprised in how good of a condition it was. I would have preferred to actually engage our contractor to deal with all the finish and issues, all the cosmetic issues, because it would help it. But the seller needed to get it on the market a little faster, and so this is where it stands today. But in my opinion, it's a fantastic first home. It's a fantastic downsizing home. If it's a fantastic home for affordability. If you have a job in Boulder and you're not sure you are planning to stick around, well, this is a home that really quickly could resell because it's not expensive. It's a very smart first home buy or downsize or young professionals.
It's really well positioned too. I mean, we hit on location quite a bit, but it is in an extremely accessible spot, and you're right next to the, well, you're not right next to, but you're within a reasonable distance to the US 36 corridor. However, there's some really good back roads just out in the other direction. And so I get there from that, and it's always a gorgeous drive. And from a
community
perspective.
And there's great open space and hiking, too.
Yeah.
And good restaurants.
Man, I went and filmed out there during, if you're local, we had this insane windstorm last week, maybe a week and a half ago, and I was out there trying to film those hiking spots and literally leaning into the wind to stay vertical, stay upright. Some gorgeous trails. That Colton trailhead that's right next by was closed, so I didn't get any footage of that, though that's probably your closest direct out onto some west-facing open space. And it's getting repaved, and I think a little bit of a lipstick job, so it's going to look quite good.
Yeah. There's a video online you can check out as well that we put together, so maybe we'll put a link in the video, in this video, to that video. it's a smart house. It makes a lot of sense. I liked the restaurants nearby. I went to one of them in our many meetings with the seller and in preparation to list this home. We also went through the comps very tightly to make sure we were right on price. And there's nothing even close to it at this price point. So we don't think it's going to be on the market long, but that's our new listing. And I can talk about it because I'm the listing agent. We can't normally talk about listings. Because unless they are actually our listings, because we're not allowed to market our competitors' properties that have exclusive arrangements for marketing. But you will find, if you are one of our clients or our prospective clients, thinking about becoming a client, sign up for the newsletter, because once a month we'll go through a variety of new listings and recent sales to highlight what's going on in the market, unusual opportunities, stunning, architecturally unique homes and so forth. You'll find that in our newsletter. It's at HouseEinstein.com. Mm-hmm.
Flawless plug.
Hey, shameless commerce section of the podcast.
I thought it was flawless. Wasn't no shame to be had.
Sorry, that's killed it. this is before your time, Hamish. But there used to be, before there were podcasts, there were shows on NPR. One was called Car Talk, and one of my favorite shows of all time. I used to listen to it. I even bought the book when I was a teenager. I just loved that show, and one of their shticks was to call it the shameless commerce section, and they would talk about their what books you could buy or what else you could, you know, the swag you could get at their website, at the Car Talk website.
Support the team type of deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should sell swag on the House Einstein website. We get a lot of traffic.
We could peddle it, I think.
Hey, we would gladly take the guerrilla marketing and subsidize your t-shirt purchases. Okay, all right. Let's move on to our last section. What do you say?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Okay.
Doing well on time.
We're low on time.
Oh, we're doing well.
Yeah, we're doing well. Yeah. Well, we're almost at an hour, so we'll probably have your attention for another 10 to 15. We'll see. Maybe we'll get through this a little faster.
I think so.
We're going to make some predictions for next year. And one of the reasons that we don't – for this year, thank you. One of the reasons that we don't – make a lot of predictions at the end of the year is because we don't have the data for the full year. We don't know what happened in December, and we don't get that data until about January 7th, and then it takes time to analyze it and think about it, and then put that together in reflection of what's actually happening in the world before we're able to really come out and make some predictions. So you can hold me to these predictions next year. We can look at how right or wrong we were, Hamish.
Yep.
So please make a note to do that. But I think that one of the biggest changes is going to be a shift to quality. And agents are going to be forced, because of the NAR lawsuit that the NAR lost and other brokerages lost that were named parties, the industry is going to change. And one of the biggest changes is not necessarily the fields that are on the MLS, but the services that buyer's agents are going to offer clients. No longer will they automatically get paid 2.8 to 3%. They're going to have to actually justify why they're earning this. I don't think they're going to go to the buy side to get it. I don't think that's going to change. But because they're going to be forced to describe what their services are, I think they're going to have to move to quality. And we've already been there. We haven't marketed it very well, but we are all about due diligence. We are all about making smart decisions and advising our clients accordingly. But you don't hear that type of branding and marketing from any other brokerage I've ever seen. Mm-mm. And so even the boutique brokerages, they do provide some analytics, but they don't market themselves as helping clients make smart decisions. That's what we do. And so I think there's going to be more competition for us because brokers are going to have to up their game. We're already there. We've been using buyer agency agreements that specify what we actually do, including due diligence.
I was just about to bring support that up.
For 5 years, since the founding, actually. Mm-hmm. The first year, so over 10 years of House Einstein's existence. And certainly even in my old brokerage, we were doing the same thing. We just weren't branded that way. So shift to quality in what agents provide as services. Maybe more competitors, Hamish, that do what we do with relocation clients, with remote videography on gimbaled cameras that we upload. Sometimes it's 4K quality video, I think, actually, is what you're uploading.
Mm-hmm.
So that people can really see what's going on, and we walk through houses. Often these videos are an hour long. Before you hop on a plane, we go there for you and check out the house. Those are the type of services that you should expect other agents to start to offer. And second prediction... Hold on. You can jump in and comment if you want to comment on any of these, Hamish. Okay. All right. Second prediction. I think the war in the Middle East is going to spread.
Yeah.
With the Houthis attacking ships in the Red Sea, Iran backing them, it being an election year, it's very likely that the Houthis are not going to just back down. They haven't backed down from the war with Saudi 9 years that Saudi has been fighting them and not winning. They're not like you're looking at ideology, religious fervor. people that live on a shoestring to begin with, and
conviction, right?
And having drones and weapons that, you know, the factor that the asymmetric cost for the United States to engage in war versus Houthi rebels to engage in war is shocking.
Mm-hmm.
How different it is, and the cost for them to buy consumer drones and strap grenades to them or whatever they're doing and take out commercial shipping is a massive detriment, mostly to Europe, but it could spill over and it could get us sucked into this war, and at least financially, if not with actual troops involved, although troops are already involved. So what does that mean with an election year and a spreading war? I think that there's a really good chance rates are not going to drop as far as people have predicted. The prediction markets are talking about like 1.5% lower in 12 months for the Fed, you know, the discount rate to drop. I don't, maybe half that is how far we're going to drop. So 0.75%, maybe. So that's my prediction, is I would not expect a 1.5% decrease in mortgage rates, because it does spill over eventually. I would expect at most a 0.75. So whatever today's rate is, which is like 6.5.
I thought it was around 7 last I saw. Let me double check.
Is it 7? Yeah, you want to look this up while
floating
I'm talking
right there.
But subtract 0.75 from wherever we are at, and that's where we're gonna land.
Mm-hmm. And you think that's going to be like the new normal, or? I mean, there's always going to be pressure from everybody to bring those rates down. Though I think a lot of people have forgotten that the rates that we saw during the pandemic period were kind of an anomaly on their own. You know?
Well, I mean, the problem is normal is just what people remember as normal.
Yeah.
People don't have a 10-year or 20-year memory for mortgage rates. They have my cousin got 4% and I'm upset that I'm paying 6.5. They're not realizing that 6.5 is actually very much within the normal.
Right.
You know, if you look at 10 or 15 years of mortgage rates, I think my first mortgage was 7.5 or 7 point something. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We will see. But I think rates will drop, but not nearly as much as people hoped or the prediction markets have been forecasting. I think inventory will keep climbing, but not as much as it climbed this year. Sales volume will pick up slightly, but more so in the markets that had a precipitous decline in sales volume. Like Boulder will not see a massive increase in volume compared to like Denver,
yeah,
or Fort Collins. It's more reactive in those markets. They have a lot more mid and entry level homes, and those buyers are far more rate sensitive. So I think we'll see more volume, maybe as much as 10% more sales volume in like Denver. Boulder, I would expect to see, I don't know, 5%, 3% increased volume. I wouldn't expect to see Boulder go gaga. People just don't want to sell homes here.
Yeah, for good reason.
If I could put on a pie chart, right, reasons for selling, dead is like 50% of Boulder listings. Getting divorced might be 25%.
Mostly dead.
Like it's mostly dead is like... That's a different term. Yeah. We'll leave that one, Hamish, what mostly dead means. And so I hate to say this, but given what happened this week in Iowa, I'm not a fan.
Oh, yeah.
I want to say this very clearly, but I think Trump's going to get reelected. I don't see people voting for Biden with any enthusiasm. If he happens to have a reason to personally decline the nomination, it would probably be the best thing for the country, because you could get somebody that has a better chance at beating Trump, because I don't think Biden's going to be able to do it, given how half the country looks at him.
Yep.
And how half the country looks at Trump. And it's might be the first election in my lifetime that I have to sit out. And Colorado is – so one of the things I always think about is swing state,
mm-hmm,
right? Colorado is not really going to be – we've been moving hard blue for at least the last 7 years. We're probably going to stay blue. But the real swing states are probably going to swing to Trump.
Yeah, pretty likely.
And I think that we're looking at Donald Trump as maybe the first president with a felony conviction. I don't know what to say. I think the Supreme Court's going to throw out the Colorado decision and force Trump back on the ballot in Colorado and back in Maine. And I think we're going to end up with Donald Trump as president. It's not what I want, but I also can't personally see voting for either of these candidates, and I don't think I'm alone. I think it's the first election of my life I will not have voted for a president is this particular election. And my vote doesn't frankly matter in Colorado anyway, but it's more symbolic.
Your vote always matters, Osman.
For the record. Okay. You keep believing those dreams, Hamish. Okay. All right, so the last prediction is I think we're going to have the best year ever, Hamish. And the reason is that the team is doing so well. We work together so well. We play together so well. I feel so strongly and believe so strongly in the skills of this team that I think we're going to have an amazing year. I think it's going to be a year where we're going to see substantial increase in revenue for sure, which is one metric. But the more important metric is, are we having fun? Are we enjoying the work we do? Are we doing good work in the ways that you and I define good work? Mm-hmm. And I'm very confident that this is a year we're going to see a breakout.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, and it's going to be a fun ride.
Completely agree. There's another bullet on these notes that says Hamish's predictions, and the whole time you've been going through yours, I'm just like, I have nothing. for the most part, I agree with you on pretty much all of your predictions, unfortunately. Properly, unfortunately. I think, after the dive we did in the data for Boulder, you're pretty much nail on the head, and you've always looked at it. And when you advised me on my home buying, you were like, well, just for the record, Boulder's like pretty decent and Westminster skates sideways, and it sure does. I think a lot of agents and buyers as well had a big hope for kind of like another 2022 year after a sluggish 2023, and it was certainly looking that way. The Fed was... It wasn't the Fed. Who came out with that, like, 1.25% drop or so in the rates? Do you remember? Either way. I think with our ongoing conflicts around the world and just the current state of things, it's less likely to happen. I'm curious, the theory we've been talking a lot about, like, pent up demand from buyers with rates being so high, I'm curious kind of what that magic number or what the change is that gets people active again. We'll see.
I think it's life.
Yeah.
Life moves on. Real estate is not a decision that people take lightly. It's often involving a major life change. Job changes, marriages, divorces, deaths, starting a family, all of those things force real estate decisions. So it's not like something you can put off, and there aren't many substitute goods. And if you tried to find a decent rental house in Boulder, you know what I'm talking about. They're all mostly, frankly, run-down, beat-up student rentals.
And expensive still.
And guess what? There's going to be more run-down, beat-up student rentals because the occupancy limits have now been effectively removed. So
that's right.
And they weren't even barely there to begin with. So now they're really gone.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen? Like, it's going to be even more student rentals that are run down and beat up that would have been mid-market family rentals. And it's unfortunate, but people have a right to live with whom they want to. Mm-hmm. I think what's most interesting, though, is that even though Boulder didn't see a price decrease this year, you know, in quarter over quarter, lots of other markets did. And yes, Boulder is down from the peak like every other market, but lots of other large cities saw significant price declines across the country. So what's going to affect psychology, in my opinion, is that a lot of these buyers are going to say, okay, prices have come down. Agents are going to tell their buyer, prices are down. Rates are going to go down further. Buy now, buy mm-hmm. now. So I think that's going to result in a bounce back. It's just a bounce back that'll be stronger in places that had more compression.
Right.
The places that had more downside are now going to have more upside. Boulder's going to move more sideways.
It's less volatile.
And this year,
right.
But that doesn't mean that actually is what's going to happen. Nobody ever knows. That's why your opinion is just as valid as mine, Hamish, and also as a homeowner. Westminster could see a significant price increase this year, and Boulder could go sideways. You never know.
Yeah, not sure. Ian made a small little reel on downtown Westminster, and I'm curious how that's going to impact my prices. I'm maybe 5 minutes from the downtown Westminster development, and was kind of stoked to have picked up this house with it being so close. It's just looking to be a new hub, though we've seen Broomfield attempt to make a downtown with some soul, and well, the First Bank Center is getting shut down, and we see how that's going. But Yeah.
Well, the First Bank Center wasn't Broomfield's downtown. The Broomfield downtown is right across from Costco. That's
that Westminster.
New development. That's I'm talking about Louisville. I'm talking about Broomfield. No, I'm talking about Superior.
Okay.
I'm confused.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was talking about Superior.
It's like Broomfield doesn't have a Costco.
My apologies. My brain was on Superior. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Never yeah, mind. No, just that yeah. That area where the First Bank is, you know, don't quote me, but from my understanding, that was supposed to be Broomfield's new kind of like little hub, and they were going to make that the downtown. And yeah, it just didn't work. So I'm hoping Westminster is a little bit more planned out for that, and it works better. I love a lot of the restaurants that are in that little section, though they are kind of unrealistically expensive. So that yeah. might kind of inhibit that.
Well, the Broomfield downtown was, I mean, that
God, what a
the
flop.
First Bank Center was such a boondoggle, and the taxpayers are on the hook, and they spent so much money on that thing.
Yeah.
It's really sad. But I don't know anything. I haven't seen Ian's reel on Westminster's downtown, so I'll do my research and report back on that.
Funnily enough, I was maybe 17, and somehow I was with a crowd, and we ended up going to the Westminster, like a development meeting, and got to look at all the renderings and everything for this downtown. And I was so young, I didn't really think of it and didn't have long-term things at the top of my mind. But it's just like a full circle, and now I live in the city. And oh yeah, that's that thing that I went to a meeting about forever ago. Kind of
yep.
neat.
There you go.
Yeah.
Real estate moves slow, and you realize that you already knew about this a decade ago or 5 years ago.
Yeah. Who would have thought? But yeah, it's not as meaty of predictions as you've got, Osman. Though I completely agree with your final prediction. We are going to have a fantastic year. Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that we're going to have a lot of fun. Hopefully, you are a huge part of the fun we have, and that you're having a lot of fun too.
Oh, yeah.
And hopefully, dear listeners, you've enjoyed this podcast. And if so, like and subscribe on whatever channels you happen to have found us on. And visit our website to sign up for our newsletter. If you happen to be looking for real estate to buy or sell in Boulder, Denver, Superior, Lafayette, Longmont, Lakewood, Aurora, Golden, Fort Collins.
Pretty much all over.
All over the Front Range and into the mountain towns. We are your real estate team. You can reach out to us, and we're happy to represent you. And if you're in other markets, make sure you're getting advice from qualified people and make a smarter real estate decision. Thanks for joining us.
Take care.